sights to show you.
That was not the sigh of a person that is enthusiastic.
I'm letting it out.
Talking about a horror comedy.
I need to let out my sadness. Okay.
Let's start with that one. Cool. You need to let out your sadness.
Just like this man.
Sean.
Sean.
the title character.
The namesake of this movie. The namesake of this movie. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's just tie it all in.
Fuck it, let's go. Let's go. Everybody, hello. This is the Horrible People's Podcast. I have never introduced here.
I was going to bring it in, but
all right, I guess whatever. I don't know where to go from here anymore. So, hi? No, I fucked up already. I was in a flow. No, mm-hmm. It's fine. Go for it. Take over.
I am your host, Alex Webster. And as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Anthony Fuentes.
I listen to this every week and I forgot it immediately. I'm not ready for the big time sometimes.
I was just like, wow, Anthony's never introduced the podcast.
I never have.
I hope he can do this. Well, you introduced the first episode.
Oh, I did?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that was like ancient fucking history.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. You introduced the first episode, and then after that, I was just like, no, he doesn't, he needs help, and then I swooped in, and
I like your intros more.
Thank you.
Yeah, because obviously.
And then since then, I just kind of took it and ran with it, and here we are.
Here we are, see?
Clearly you...
And we learned another example of why this doesn't happen, because I will forget things.
I know.
I'm your host...
What's my name?
Scrappy-Doo. Ah, fuck, that's not me.
Which, by the way, I learned one of our listeners loves Scrappy-Doo.
Really?
Yeah, and was just like, fuck you guys, basically.
Oh my gosh. Listen, tastes aren't consistent across the board, some people have standards and some people don't. It's
fine. It was Tristan who gave me the wonderful horror poster of poker. Yeah.
Well, I love him then. Never mind.
Yeah, so cool. I will forgive him for his transgressions.
Oh. And you know who had a pretty cool poster? Was this movie. Shaun of the Dead,
bringing it back today.
Right? Yes.
We are talking about the... What year did this movie?
2004, which I didn't even put on the outline. But
fucking
it's there.
A.
Okay. But I know these things, guys. We're fine.
Yeah. So we are talking about the 2004 film Shaun of the Dead.
Good old horror comedy like Miss Webster loves them, right?
You know what? This is one of the good ones.
This is,
but
yeah.
This is like the horror comedy. Well, this and like, I don't know. I'm trying to think, like Zombieland, maybe?
Zombieland 2. No, that's a good point.
This is like the... We talked about this in Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
Mm-hmm.
The
actual horror comedy right there.
Right. But like, this is part of the zombie comedy.
Mm-hmm. Where they called it a zomcom.
Yeah, zomcoms.
Mm-hmm.
Where it, they're zombies and the subset of the subset of horror comedy.
Yeah.
Where it's specifically comedies about zombie movies.
Well,
so.
we're about to get into a whole thing with zombie movies, but it's kind of funny with this. I like that it's this and Zombieland are like, this is a UK comedy and Zombieland is like a straight American production. And you kind of see the difference in values between them.
Yeah.
There's, like, set pieces and Woody Harrelson. And then there's just, like, guy's fucking up his life.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Big, big, big difference in types of humor. But
laugh, dickheads. But let's go ahead and kick it off with the IMDb synopsis.
Oh, this is the briefest one we've probably had. A man's uneventful life is disrupted by the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Period.
Done. That's a pretty apt synopsis.
I think so. I mean, there's obviously a lot of layers to it, but that's the catalyst for sure, is his uneventful life is disrupted by the zombie apocalypse. I always like how they allude to it, too. They never say what quite caused it. Like, you hear it in the background.
Oh, yeah, they're just like, we don't say the Z word.
Yeah. This one was directed by Edgar Wright, one of my favorite directors, actually. Written by Simon Pegg and, of course, Edgar Wright. This is a big landmark film for these people's careers, and we're going to get into how this kind of launched them off. But this is starring, of course, Simon Pegg, who wrote the film, Kate Ashfield, Lucy Davis, Nick Frost, who plays Ed, who also basically launched his career from this, Dylan Moran, Bill Nighy, who is a very, very well-known British actor, and Penelope Wilton, who might be known. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know a lot of these people, except Bill Nighy and Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. But this actually had a budget of $6.1 million. I believe that was pounds, but they put a dollar sign on IMDb, so whatever.
Maybe they converted it.
Maybe. I don't know. But the box office was $30 million, which was pretty good. And by the way, guys, I think we fucked up a little bit because we promised the audience something before we dive into this. We got a theme going.
Oh, shit.
We got a theme going, and our day has been so shit that we forgot about this.
We forgot. Thank you for bringing it up before we got into, like, you know, halfway through the episode.
Well, the last sentence I said, I think, before we capped last episode was, fuck it, let's just give us up the theme next week. So this is what you're waiting for. Introduce us, please, to the theme. Alex, what is it?
So we are talking about a zombie film this week, but for the entire month of July, we are going into the theme of zombies versus aliens.
Yep.
So this entire month we're going to be rotating back and forth between zombie movie and alien movie, and then we'll probably end up having some discussion throughout about whether or not we think zombie movies or alien movies are better. And we both definitely have differing opinions, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I think going through these movies, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be real tough because we got some good ones.
Yeah.
Like a real challenging, like, is it going to be zombies or aliens? What is it going to be?
So it'll be fun. And then we have a special gift, a parting gift, so to speak, for you guys at the end of the month as well.
Oh,
so
that's going to be fun too.
So we have a lot of fun stuff planned for this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will, yeah, it's just going to be a fun time. But
again, this is the last month before, if you guys missed our little thing, this is the last month before for the season finale.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a month break and we're going to come back in September. But for now, we're going to run through our theme, give you guys one real kick-ass final episode, and then determine whether zombies or aliens are more badass.
Zombie movies, alien movies. Please, we're not going to talk. Are we going to talk about the entire, like,
yeah, we can get there. Who the fuck
the
knows?
The whole mythology of zombies and aliens?
No, That's way too much. We have full-time jobs, lady.
Let's I know. But there's that. And then also, Where was I going with that? But yeah, so the entire month of August, we will be off doing our adult things and planning the next season of this podcast.
Yeah, because we're starting off really goddamn big for season two. Like enough to where I'm actually pretty overwhelmed right now, trying to even just, with that month, like, how the fuck are we going to do this?
Yeah, but we have a lot. But
we have some help, so we're good. We got this, guys. Don't even worry.
We're bringing in some I don't know, support?
Support. I like that. The
reinforcements. There we go.
Reinforcements. The bench. They're coming off the bench.
It's been a long fucking day, guys.
Metaphors.
Long day. Anyway, so let's go ahead and kick off the theme on hopefully a decent foot. I will take you guys through a brief history of zombies.
A very, very brief history, because if we wanted to get really deep into this, there are other movies for that.
Check out Eli Roth's History of Horror. They did a whole episode. It's like an hour or 45 minutes, I'm not entirely sure, on zombies. Specifically zombies in horror films. And it's really great. I enjoyed it significantly. And it does a great history. And it has really cool actors. And I think Edgar Wright is actually also interviewed.
I believe he is, actually. Yeah, that was on the notes.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright. Yeah. And again, this is going to be like a Criminal Minds thing with me. I have to watch this at some fucking point. I do a horror podcast.
You still haven't watched it?
I still haven't seen
Motherfucker.
It.
Motherfucker. They are like, I don't know. Potato chips. You can't just watch one episode. Like,
no, that's why.
They're very bad in that sense, but I do enjoy them. I still need to finish the series because I still have a couple episodes, but...
Wait, what's it on for our audience?
Shudder.
For our audience.
Yeah, it is on Shudder.
Oh, okay. Oh, we have Shudder. Hell yeah, for this podcast. Thanks for the support, everybody.
Yeah, so we have Shudder. If you have Shudder, check it out. It's really cool. They also have like an uncut version of it, and that's like a podcast.
Huh. So this is more free-flowing?
Yeah, it's more free-flowing, and it's conversation between Eli Roth and some of the people on the show.
Oh.
Or on the
series.
Yeah, series.
Badass. Okay, well, instead of an hour, though, you get like, I don't know, 8 minutes.
Yeah, so
Alex, let's go!
So, Today, let's learn briefly about zombies, our beloved undead creatures that infest our entertainment media from time to time, usually depending on marketing trends.
Yeah, that's a big indicator of how much you know about zombies.
Yeah, this will be a general history, since we'll probably want to save the full history for a certain George A. Romero film, maybe.
Eventually, at some point.
But here are a few of the highlights. The earliest reference to the word zombie with an I in English was actually in 1819, exactly 200 years ago. So happy birthday, the word zombie.
you know, it's my script when my brief highlights go back 200 years. Just so you know.
Though the concept of reanimated dead folks has been utilized in the past and would continue in literature, though often under different names, Frankenstein was a prime example of this.
Yeah, so reanimated corpses were big in history, but there's zombies that become their own thing gradually. Yeah.
The term originated as Haitian folklore, in which a dead body is reanimated, mostly by means of magic. Mm-hmm. This has changed in modern times, where science fiction is often attributed to the rising of the dead.
Yeah, and again, this movie, like we said at top, does a really fun thing where they allude in very different ways.
Definitely. In 1929, a sensationalized book called The Magic Island by W.B. Seabrook introduced the zombie with an I to the U.S., and soon the creature would be featured in film. Occasionally,
yeah.
It took a while for zombies to catch on with everyone else.
Yeah, they were, like, sprinkled at first.
A sprinkling of zombies.
Yeah.
Most early representations of zombies in film were based on the Haitian voodoo version of the creature. So stories often involve some element of magic to bring back the undead.
This is, I would like to call, like, the amulet era.
The amulet era.
We need a MacGuffin there.
This all changed with the release of George A. Romero's 1968 film Night of the Living Dead. These would be known as Romero zombies and would turn the creatures into a phenomenon.
Yeah, so from this point on, the current zombies you know are all Romero zombies or an offshoot of that.
Definitely. Yeah. He created the modern zombie as we know it.
And he didn't get the rights to it, so now we can all use it and have fun. That was a bad move on his part, but yeah.
Romero zombies were used for two things in his early films. To comment on the social ills of the modern era by addressing government ineptitude, bioengineering, greed, and more. They were also used to scare the ever-living shit out of people.
Oh, yeah. Especially for, like, 1960s audiences, they're just like, oh my Jesus, are those intestines?
Well, it's truly, like, a valid excuse for gore.
Yeah.
It definitely gave them the excuse they needed.
Yeah, I think so.
Because even for, like, vampire movies, like, it's very clean.
Mm-hmm. They're like, comparison. Oh, just bites on the neck and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just like, no, your torso is, like, over there.
Yeah. Your guts are, like, oh, they are out.
You're in that thing's hands.
our man, Roger Ebert, mm-hmm. actually called out the film and theater owners at the time, saying that admitting children into the theater was a horrible idea, as it could be incredibly traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
He felt this because of an experience he had at a screening where children in the audience became genuinely terrified at the graphic violence on screen, with many of them crying throughout the duration of the film. Maybe don't bring your children to horror films.
Well, see, this is in the 60s. People don't really understand that, because Night of the Living Dead is, like, a new thing. So they're like, oh, of course kids can watch the thing about the little creatures, and it's like, oh, those are intestines. And Roger Ebert was one of the, you know, this is early in his career. So he's not, like, the renegade punk rock motherfucking film critic right now. He's, like, still trying to get a name for himself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that actually helped put him a little bit on the map, though.
Oh. Yeah. Well, still, zombie films became so distinct from traditional horror that they were turned into their own subgenre.
Yep.
So, yay!
Which we're again, in contention right now with the aliens.
Yeah. While zombies saw a brief surge in the decade following Romero's landmark film, the genre would run out of steam throughout the 80s and well into the 90s, becoming more of a staple of video rental stores than something you would catch at a movie theater.
Yeah, I think I remember this era as me as a child.
Well, it says well into the 90s, but, oh yeah, for zombie films, yeah, mm-hmm. that would make sense.
Zombie films,
well, yeah. Again, it, actually, to go into our argument, it mm-hmm. was overshadowed by Aliens.
True. Good old Will Smith.
And I was thinking Independence Day. Yeah. Like, I think Independence Day definitely, like, flicked it out of the...
I think so. Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right.
Oh, I fucking love Independence Day.
That's such
Day.
A good fucking movie, dude.
I fucking love Independence Day.
I know it, like, logically doesn't make sense to a lot of people. People get hung up, but I'm like, nah, dude, give me the popcorn.
I don't get... No, actually, Independence Day is one of those few movies where I will just, like, let suspension go. Of disbelief. Mm-hmm. You can take it. I'll enjoy
like,
it.
Like, I'm sorry, is that Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith, and Bill Pullman? Please. I need speeches everywhere. By all means.
Yeah. Have, like, you know, have a day with it. No, I fucking love Independence Day. It scared the shit out of me, though.
Oh, dude, yeah. The scenes with the lab guy and the
Data?
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Lab yeah. guy. You know, the guy.
Fucking Data. Yeah. But no, yeah, that scene scared the fuck out of me. Anyway, the genre, much like the zombie itself, would come back to life thanks to a franchise maker that is still with us to this day and is actually a video game. Capcom's Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
This game was huge and repopularized the genre for an entire generation, and Hollywood wasn't ready to let a surge in popularity go unexploited.
No. No.
But they were beat to the punch by the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Boyle's 2002 hit film 28 Days Later became both critically and commercially acclaimed, making zombies a staple in film once again. The film stuck to the tenets that made zombie films stand out, a strong political and social message, and making zombies fucking terrifying. This time, they were running.
Oh yeah, that was a big development.
This is the beginning of the fast zombie, which is its own debate in and of itself. The fast zombie versus the slow zombie.
Isn't that crazy though? Because like... It happened in literally 2002.
Yeah.
That's how recent fast zombie, in all of zombie history, 200 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
The word was spelled with an I, like all this shit. It took this long to get our speed zombies.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the idea. Like, so many people, especially, like, people who have been involved in Hollywood and, like, horror and zombie, like, lore for a longer period of time, mm-hmm. hate fast zombies because it's such a new development and, like, they fear change.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where it's just, like, they feel like zombies are such an embodiment of, like, decay
mm-hmm.
that they shouldn't have the ability to go fast.
Oh, it's a logical thing. Like, why their muscles should not be functioning in that.
Well, yeah. Even in, like, think like The Walking Dead,
mm-hmm.
you know, like when it's just like you have like these like corpses that are reanimated, but like they're only like half a body.
Yeah, they're just kind of shuffling
around.
They
shouldn't be able to move fast anyway. So that's kind of, I think, the logic that a lot of those people have.
You know,
I love seeing both.
I like both. But actually, with what you just brought up right now, you made a very good the connection there, because I can see the purists being like, well, old zombies, they shamble and they're missing parts. Like, you can get really creative with the gore, and yeah. they're totally terrifying in each distinctive mm-hmm. kind of way. Fast zombies, you can't really do that. So a lot of them kind of look similar and rush in hordes, and it's like a whole different thing.
They tried in World War Z, but like, it wasn't...
Yeah, that was fucking World War Z. Huh? Ugh, that movie, I hated it.
You hated
I
it?
I hated it.
I didn't dislike it.
I never read the book, though.
I liked the book a lot.
Yeah, I've heard the books, but we may have had this discussion at our old Link U desk at some point.
I think we did.
I'm having deja vu right fucking now, actually.
I think we did.
Yeah, this may have been a point of contention early on in our professional relationship.
No, I definitely think we had this conversation about this. Before.
Well, also another thing, I think fast zombies were primed to be ready because while zombies were becoming popular again thanks to Resident Evil, they were still the slow ones. So yeah. People could have got over it pretty fast if you didn't change up the formula.
You know what, though? Even in Resident Evil, like, they still sneak up on you, and it's fucking terrifying when they do.
And they got other creatures, too. It's a whole fucking thing.
Don't they eventually get kind of fast, though? Because I played Resident Evil, like, 7 the other day, and I was like, these bitches are really fast.
No, they're not ones in 7. It might be 5 or 6.
Five. I'm thinking 5.
Well, the thing... Okay, my nerd time coming out right now. Resident Evil, that happens is there's a slow shambling ones up until 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4, they're infected by, like, a thing called Las Plagas, or, like, some mm-hmm. kind of a... some kind of virus that... or a parasite that actually gives them their mental facilities for the, like, to be able to pick up weapons and run around and plot things, but their personality and everything else is gone. So they're just zombies, but with functionality.
So they can run.
They can run, but they don't really run that much. They run more in 5, the one you play.
No, I was playing 5 the other day, and I was like, I am getting murked left and right. This is awful.
Oh, man, Resident Evil. Okay, all right. I can go on about that one. But, continue.
Anthony's very enthused right now.
The coffee might be hitting a little bit.
That's
now.
Good.
A little bit.
When 28 Days Later was in production, an ambitious young director with a major love for horror, and particularly George A. Romero's films, was making a name for himself in television, and thought up a concept that would be the basis for the film that would solidify the zombie revival of the 2000s, and that person was Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright, the subject of this. Yeah, because this is something I want to keep stressing. In film, Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later popularized, right? But as with anything Hollywood, you can have one film and then everything fucking sucks. But when you put a second hit of almost equal proportion with the same subgenre, suddenly you have a phenomenon. And that hit was this film. This film and one other film, too.
I must say, I also love your design.
Oh, for the script?
Yeah.
Again, listeners, you guys don't get to see our scripts.
One day.
We get creative with them. So
it's very fun.
All right, well, now that we're on the subject, let's learn a little bit about this prolific director again. One of my fucking favorites. Edgar Wright's parents never had a VCR, but he did have a subscription to Fangoria and would find himself obsessed with zombies as a child.
I wanted a Fangoria subscription so bad.
I always passed by them, but I got video game magazines with, like, Resident Evil on the cover and shit. So, you know,
fucking nerd.
The same, yeah. He would enter contests with his short films, which were almost always comedic takes on popular genres, and even win some major awards, actually, growing up. So he got one, I think, where he actually got funding for something, like, out of fucking nowhere. But growing up, he was obsessed with George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead and American Werewolf in London, directed by some asshole. For more on that, refer to our Twilight Zone movie podcast, and also fuck John Landis and his stupid child.
And that's all. That is the official Horrible People's podcast stance on that.
Yeah, all the Landis is fuck them. Unless you're a fan and you're not related to them. You know, you're cool. But he would turn his obsession with filmmaking into a career path after graduating with a degree in audiovisual design. While in school, he created spoofs that garnered a lot of local attention, like, I love his names, Carbolic Soap, The Unparkables, and Rolf Harris Saves the World.
Yeah, I would have mispronounced every single one of those. I was like, The Unsparkables.
I thought it said Catholic Soap.
Catholic Soap, The Unsparkables, and Golf.
Yeah, Golf Saves the World. That's funny. Okay, in 1995, Wright would release his official directorial debut, which is actually a remake of a film he made in college called A Fistful of Fingers. It was obviously a spoof of the Western genre, and it was not a hit. In fact, it isn't even commercially available right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's no way to find this shit. I think he screened it once, and, like, that was enough. That was it.
He was like, I'm done.
He pulled a Raimi, though, with the Western spoof. But, you know, obviously they have very similar paths here. Wright was not satisfied with the project, but he managed to get it aired on satellite TV, which caught the attention of comedians Matt Lucas and David Williams, who allowed him to work on their comedy show. He would continue to work on programs on the Paramount Comedy Channel, the UK equivalent of Comedy Central, which I watched a lot when I was, like, younger. I grew up on that show.
I mean, I loved Comedy Central when I was a kid, but now I just think it's garbage.
Well, now it kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think the quality is the same as it was. Like, the last good thing of Comedy Central is Broad City to me.
Yeah, no, I love Broad City.
Broad City's the shit.
But it's over now.
It's dead. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They last, like, their lost prestige show.
I loved Broad City.
Yeah,
so good.
It was the last good one, man. And I think Trevor Noah's funny also.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he's good. But then you also know Jon Stewart. So I don't know. We'll see.
You know what? I had that conversation with my mom over the weekend. I was just like, I miss Jon Stewart to my mom. And my mom was just like, Trevor Noah's funny. And I'm like, But he's not, like, Jon Stewart funny.
Yeah, he doesn't get mad. Like, Stewart got fucking mad. I'm just like, yes, righteous rage.
I need it.
I need this. I need the fuel. Oh, that's funny. But during this time, actually, he ended up meeting a longtime colleague and somebody we know, obviously, very, very well. Mr. Simon Pegg.
Yay!
Yeah. Simon Pegg and Jessica Stevenson had an idea for a sitcom called Spaced, which would incorporate fantasy elements into the traditional sitcom genre. I actually just was watching an episode of this before you walked in. That was what was on TV, actually. They needed a highly visual director to sell these sequences and remembered Edgar Wright from their days at Paramount Comedy, actually. Wright signed on and provided exactly what the showrunners needed, using cinematic language from horror and sci-fi films, even though the story was more of a traditional sitcom. And from actually watching it, he totally did that. Like, it's realistic, single-shot kind of stuff, and then it goes into fantasy out of fucking nowhere.
Well, it's great, though. I think that's, like, that's a great concept, in my opinion.
No,
I love that.
Again, it's like a less networky Scrubs, if that makes sense.
No, I get that.
Yeah. It was around this time when Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg began to bond over their shared obsession with Dawn of the Dead and decided to use zombies in one of the fantasy sequences. So this is the episode I was actually watching. It was the third episode titled Art. And the main character, who's Tim, played by Simon Pegg, would hallucinate about stopping the zombie apocalypse thanks to being high and playing Resident Evil 2. So back to Resident Evil, and again, Resident Evil 2 is probably my favorite in the whole series.
I've never played it.
Actually, no, Resident Evil 4 is my favorite. Resident Evil 2 is right below, though. That's a really good one. I still need to beat the remake. It's been sitting on my shelf. Again, nerding. All right.
Nerd.
The sequence, however, it actually sparked something in the writer-director duo. Like, they had a lot of fun with this. So they decided that they wanted to make a zombie film and blend it with the comedy genre, which is something that they had a lot of experience with Pegg being a parody kind of guy. So this was in 1999, a full 3 years before the release of 28 Days Later. So Edgar Wright was, like, on top of his shit when it came to zombies and stuff. They had a name for the quote-unquote Zomcom, which is what they were calling it, and it was Tea Time of the Dead, which is...
Have quite the same ring.
I don't like it at all. Nope. But that was the working title at first. At some point, Simon Pegg called up Edgar Wright to let him know that director Danny Boyle was also making a zombie film, and that would actually eventually become 28 Days Later and get the credits for reviving the genre. To this, Wright simply stated, "Oh God, we're fucked."
Au contraire.
Exact quote.
Contraire.
Right? Little did he fucking know. Actually, it keeps getting worse, though, because, you know what we do. One of the initial production companies, Film 4, pulled a tremendous amount of money from the budget and left the filmmakers without a production company for some time.
No!
Yeah. This actually left Edgar Wright broke as a fucking joke. So the point... where he actually was deeply in debt to his own friends, who were lending him money so he can sustain himself. Yeah, he actually had to turn down TV show networking jobs, like directing actual episodes for major TV networks, because at any point they could get funding and he needed to jump into Shaun of the Dead. Or Tea Time of the Dead. but yeah, so he was like waiting and waiting to get funding and being fucking poor.
And that is just like dedication and like vision.
Right?
Like...
Well, I agree. I think he's kind of seeing it happen, though. He's just like, the revival's coming, and I gotta be a part of this bitch.
Yeah.
Eventually, Working Title Films stepped up and helped Shaun of the Dead get the funding it needed to get produced.
Yay!
And boy, did it get produced. Actually, it's not as bad as some of the other ones, but you know how it goes. Alex, let us know what happened.
What happened, So, the aim of the film would not be to parody zombie films, but actually parody romantic comedies and use zombies as the device.
Which it totally fucking does.
I think an argument could be made either way.
Yeah, oh, there will be later on in the discussion questions.
Simon Pegg would take the role of Sean, but needed a hilarious partner for the role of Ed. So he enlisted his roommate slash actor slash waiter at a Mexican restaurant in the UK, Nick Frost.
Mexican restaurant in the UK? I don't know about that.
I know. Because there are even, like, some Mexican restaurants on, like, the East Coast that I'm just like, ah!
There's some Mexican restaurants in Los Angeles where I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
We are, like, right there.
Yeah. But still, like, even those ones, I'm like, in the East Coast, I'm like, I'm not even close.
Peg thought Frost was the funniest person he had ever met, and he had actually gotten him a part on Spaced, though he blew through his Spaced money pretty fast and eventually went back to waiting tables.
I think the approximate timeline from the interview I saw was 6 weeks.
Wow.
It took him 6 weeks to blow through his Spaced money, because in this time, he's actually a lot like the character Ed. Nick Frost, they're basically one-to-one. So it was written, like, he was doing the exact same thing to Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg would get up, put on his tie, go to work, and he'd just wait tables and fucking play video games and eat food and chill on the couch. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
Nick Frost and I would never get along.
Well, he did change eventually.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Now he's Nick Frost. The two had been roommates since 1995 and had developed very detailed plans in case of a zombie apocalypse. Which I, of course, who
We've
doesn't?
We've all done this. We've
who,
all done
who
this.
Who doesn't?
We may have done this back in our old office space as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Nick Frost had frequented a pub within 2 minutes walking distance from their house and came up with the idea of using the bar as a safe haven during the zombie apocalypse, mainly due to the access to food, drinks, and heavy doors.
Heavy doors, yes.
Important. The production company, Working Title Films, actually didn't think too fondly of Nick Frost, but Simon Pegg was adamant that they were a package deal, and Frost was allowed to be a part of the film.
Yeah, I think this was, like, one of the big discussions, because they were trying to push him out.
Wow.
And Pegg's just like, I know he's a fuck-up. I know, trust me, he's funny.
The script was passed around to several high-profile British actors and actresses, but a lot of people just didn't seem to really, quote, get the film.
No.
Although Helen Mirren agreed to do the film, but only if she could play the character of Ed.
Imagine Helen Mirren.
I know. Fucking, oh my gosh.
Just dropping food all over her body and shit.
That would be very funny. Eventually, the film would cast actors like Bill Nighy.
Nighy.
And Kate Ashfield, who loved the script.
Yeah, so they got some talent on board.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of cameos for British comedians at the time.
Yeah. An early table read with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost sold everyone, as the duo were hilarious together. Mm-hmm. On the first day of shooting, Edgar Wright decided to shoot two complex one-shot sequences with Simon Pegg, Sean, in order to establish to the crew that he was, quote, not fucking around.
Dude, I love Edgar Wright's cussing. He's so, like, every quote I find with him, he's like, yeah, that piece of shit. Like, he's really,
like,
good about that.
He curses a lot.
Well, he's very elegant in his answers to interviews and stuff, but then he will throw in, and yeah, fuck that.
Yeah. Wright saw this as his second chance to make a debut feature, as A Fistful of Fingers flew way under the radar and was generally out of public consciousness at this point.
Unless he had satellite TV that one fucking time.
On, like, HBO and, yeah. Like, on, like, I don't know, 2 a.m. on, like, a Wednesday.
Yeah, on one Wednesday.
One Wednesday. And it was just on, like, the East Coast, like, not even on West Coast, like... at first, the crew assumed the film would go straight to DVD, but as the shoot progressed, people started believing in Shaun of the Dead, showing huge support. Support.
Bringing lots of sherbet.
I'm gonna kick you. Support, though sometimes it felt like a student film thanks to the tiny, tiny budget.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to save a huge amount of money on actual zombies themselves thanks to the fandom of Spaced. Many fans of the sitcom volunteered to work practically for free, even with long hours and lots of makeup. They got up to 1,100 extras, which is so cool.
That's some fucking fans right there,
yeah,
man.
That's nice, though.
Yeah.
With a small budget, cameos from several British comedians and Bill freaking Nighy. I can never...
It's weird. It's fucking weird.
Well, because I always read his name, but I can never say his name. Shaun of the Dead was at last ready for the big time.
I will say, I only know it because of, like, there's this other podcast we listen to, We Hate Movies.
Oh, yeah.
They do the perfect Bill Nighy impression.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, their version of him, he's always just trying to score some coke. So he's just like, ooh.
I do like.
Are we in line? Because I could use some lines.
I love We Hate Movies.
That's such a good. We want you guys to listen to us, but if you get a chance to listen to We Hate Movies, they're fucking awesome.
If you like the play by plays, like if you like the play by plays that we do,
You will really love We Hate Movies. Holy shit.
And they did a fantastic episode on The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I still need to listen to that one.
I still need to listen to that one. It's so funny.
Their Child's Play 3 one was one of my favorites.
I don't think I listened.
They do the Chucky yell, like, really, really well.
It's good. But anyway.
So now the film's actually pretty done. So when I was doing my research, there's not a lot on the creation of this film. Like, there's some stuff, but it's mostly, like, their thought process into, like, what went into the characters and such. And it's pretty repetitive. But eventually, the film, you know, got completed and was ready for release. So in order to generate buzz for the film, Edgar Wright set up a screening for several horror directors and accidentally snatched himself one of his inspirations. And the man responsible for the zombies of today, George A. Romero.
Hell fucking yeah. Yeah,
he actually got him. George Romero was in Miami on his vacation. And so he just happened, Universal just happened to be doing a screening and stuff. So they're like, fuck it, let's do it for George Romero. Yeah.
Imagine, like, right? Just showing a movie that you worked your ass off, you went broke for.
Went broke for.
And, like, basically blood, sweat, and tears. And then you have the opportunity to show it to your fucking hero.
Yeah, the one who's... You watched his movies growing up as a baby.
Yeah, that's like a little one. That's like me being, like, you know, as broke as I was in college, making a movie and then, like, showing it to fucking, like, I don't know, like, Kevin Smith or something.
Right? I'm glad you went with Smith and not the other Kevin S. That's like me making a movie with my current level of brokenness and showing it to Martin Scorsese or Paul Thomas Anderson, we'll say. But the famous director and Edgar Wright, who I got to experience the thing we're fantasizing about here, George Romero loved this fucking film. Like, he fucking loved it. Even with Simon Pegg apologizing to him for Bill Nighy's character turning into a zombie way too fast. Romero literally was just like, I don't mind. That was it. Yeah. He called it, quote, an absolute blast. And that quote would be on all the promo material. But his sentiment was so genuine that he enlisted Peg and Frost as zombies for his own film, Land of the Dead.
I love that so much. Yes,
right? He got them. And he was able to get that film made because of the success, of course, of Danny Boyle's film. And eventually this one as well. So Shaun of the Dead received major critical acclaim. And helped revive the zombie film, of course, alongside 28 Days Later, as we stated before. They were only 2 years apart. So yeah. This is just another, like, fans were finally getting their due. I mean, you can play Resident Evil, but you don't always want to invest in Resident Evil. Sometimes you want to sit.
Yeah, you want to sit and watch and, like, not have to, like, do things.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And these ones really did.
I watch video game playthroughs instead of actually playing them.
I gotta admit, I do love watching video game playthroughs now. Like, because I don't have time. I don't have time to, like, try to solve the problems on the game sometimes. Yeah.
Well, plus you get, like, the commentary, so it's like you're playing with friends.
If you get a good one, right?
Yeah, if you find, like, a good group of people that, like, do, like, funny commentary. I think I've watched a couple, like, in Until Dawn playthroughs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and now I'm just like, I don't even need to play the game, which is kind of like, I want to, because it just, I feel like
it's cinematic.
I do a better job, but like, it's basically like, it's so fucking funny.
It's a choose your own adventure one, basically, right?
Yeah. Basically. Yeah, like, you have to make, like, the right choices, and you want, like, or else you're gonna get, like, a bad ending. Very fun.
Because they branch out like a motherfucker in those games, that's right.
Yeah, like, even, like, one choice, one time, like, in, like, the first, like, 30 seconds of the game will, like, fuck everything up for the rest of it.
Did you step on their toes? Because that was a bad fucking idea.
Yeah, because now you're fucked.
Now you're gonna be missing your legs later on.
Yeah, literally. Like, it's so cool.
Oh, I think you love those kind of games, though. Those are actually really, yeah, they're nice. I'm actually watching right now a playthrough of Fallout New Vegas.
Oh, cool. Because
I love Fallout, except this person is killing everything, which you're not supposed to do in Fallout games, but every person, every town, he's just like, I'm just going to kill them all. Whatever. I don't care about quests.
Yeah, I've seen people try to get, like, the bad endings for mm-hmm. Until Dawn, and, like, I think I'm going to watch one of those, because I just want to know, like, what the bad end.
Right?
Well, and it's the same thing for, like, when I played Bioshock for the first time. Like, I was like, I'm getting the good ending.
Yeah.
Like, I am a good fucking person. Like, I can't, because I can only watch people be mean in video games. I myself can't be mean in video games.
I always play the good one first, but I will follow it up with the most asshole playthrough possible.
No, I can't do it.
Well, the thing is, like, I have that moment where I'm like, oh, that would be too bad. But then I'm like, but I already saw how it turns out when it's good. So, you know, and then it becomes a whole different playthrough. You eventually.
So then you become a psychopath.
Yeah, right. Then I become a crazy motherfucker. The best. Where were we?
Bringing it back.
Okay, so yeah, of course, blah, 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 blah. Audiences and critics were a little puzzled, though, as to why the film decided to go with the slow-moving zombies over the new and improved sprinting motherfuckers.
New and improved, quote unquote.
Yeah, according to audiences at the time. But Simon Pegg actually brushed this off by saying, quote, death is not an energy drink.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, a lot of people, or not a lot of people, I'm like exaggerating on that, but in the...
Okay, Trump.
I know. So many people.
People are saying...
all of these people. I have so many people telling me this. All of these people. No, anyway.
Stop the running, Mexicans.
In Eli Roth's History of Horror, in the zombie episode, one of the reasonings for not... going for fast zombies is very similar to the death is not an energy drink type of mentality, where it's like you have people who have like disabilities, you mm-hmm. have people who normally can't run, like yeah. I myself right now cannot sprint for an extensively long period of time. Mm-hmm. Like no one, unless you're like training to be a runner, are not extensive runners.
Interesting. It's funny how people get really caught up on the logic and that like yeah. stops them from taking that step.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like it's just like someone who like has like utilized a wheelchair their whole life, like physically does not have the muscle
mm-hmm,
to like
true.
Run.
There's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And like even if they like not the wheelchair one, but you know, some decaying zombie like
yeah.
did the sprint. They're going to run out of steam unless they catch somebody and then they get their nutrients again.
Like, they want brains, motherfucker.
If they don't, they're back to being slow. They're, yeah. like, right back to being slow.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a good one. Zombies Ooh. With, like, actual metabolism. That would be interesting.
I like how we both got to that consensus
we're
at
like,
the
hold on
same
a second.
Point. At that same moment, we were just
there
like, oh.
There is a logical connection there. Although, there's, you know.
Medium zombies.
Stop and go zombies. Stop and go zombies.
Traffic zombies.
Traffic zombies. The actual Olympic runners are the ones that are like the best zombies. That'd be the best.
Get like Usain Bolt
yeah.
as a zombie. Fuck. The worst.
That's funny.
Anyway.
We're back. All right. But Shaun of the Dead can be considered actually a sleeper hit, as we've been covering mostly sleeper hits lately. This is the third one in a row.
Sorry.
No, it's
well,
fine.
No. I mean, Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah, sleeper hit.
Sleeper hit?
It was a sleeper hit also.
Oh, Blair yeah, because it
also...
progressively... Okay, mm-hmm. fine. I'll allow it.
Yep. So, and this one's probably the least highest grossing of all of them, but it was in the UK. So, yeah. They don't really make that much money anyways.
We can't blame them for that.
Yeah, we can't. Geography, man. I'm sorry. But, again, sleeper hit. When it debuted in the US, it did so at 7th place, with only about 3 million. But the hype was strong, and word of mouth was really goddamn good, and it would eventually propel the film just past $30 million worldwide.
Not bad.
Not bad. The film actually ended up outgrossing 28 days later in the UK, a very pleasant surprise for the filmmakers, and that was thanks to a two-week delay, because Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake was also releasing at that time.
Oh.
So it comes in I didn't put this in here, but it comes as a pillar, like a three pillar here. So you have
28
days later, Shaun of the Dead, and Dawn of the Dead. Because Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead was actually written by James Gunn.
Oh.
And so Snyder didn't write it, so it was good. but like,
also like James Gunn.
Yeah, a little problematic in some aspects.
We're just, you know, everyone at this point, but,
I know, there's no safety.
I know.
But I mean, like, with, but it's, all those back-to-back, like, brought zombies fucking back hard.
Yeah.
Like, hard. Yeah. And this was all up to 2004.
You know what, now that I think about it, I've actually never seen 28 Days Later.
That's a Cillian Murphy. So I can't blame you. His face is still Cillian Murphy's face.
Yeah, creepy ass Cillian Murphy type face.
Scarier than the zombies in some, yeah. I'm sure.
But I have seen 28 Weeks Later.
No, it's like way different.
Yeah, like yeah. I've seen that one like 3 times. Like
really?
Because that's the one that's on TV all the time because it's not as good.
That's like an FX movie or TBS movie.
Yeah. It's like it's one of the ones that's on TV or it's like streaming all the time. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of the sequels. Like,
don't you want to watch it? Please, can you please watch my movie?
Yeah. Or she's like, see, it's just like the first one, except that it's not at all like the first one.
You know what's bigger than days? Weeks. You should try it.
Well, because then the third one is 28 months later.
They didn't ever release it, though.
I know, but it exists, right?
No. They wanted to for the longest time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I've never seen it, but I just think that's funny. That,
well, we didn't see it because it doesn't exist.
Obviously, that's what I'm getting at. But, like, I just think that's a funny progression, that's all.
Right? I think they actually, I read recently, they want to do, not necessarily 28 months later, but they want Danny Boyle to do another thing in that series.
Oh, so, like, in that, like, universe?
In that universe, like, a second sequel, all that stuff. So who the fuck knows? Because zombies, basically, they got back in 2004, but they never went away.
Well, they're kind of like, I would argue, and I don't know if we're gonna get to it in the discussion, but they're kind of on their way out.
They are. Like, they're dwindling.
Like, after, like, I want to say The Walking Dead kind of, like, you know, jumped the shark.
You're right, dude. That's what did it.
Yeah, because after The Walking Dead jumped the shark, like, everyone's just like, fuck zombies.
No, seriously. Like, I think that's a very good point, because The Walking Dead jumped the shark, but I want to say like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, 3 years ago, because season 9 was the recent one. So we had a good stretch of zombie media, literally for more than a decade, and then fucking one bad season.
Truly, truly, with The Walking Dead is one of the few things that genuinely frightens me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch The Walking Dead because it gives me nightmares. It's one of the few things that gives me anxiety to the point of nightmares.
Interesting. Well,
it stresses me the fuck out.
How much of it did you watch?
Like, season 5.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, you were watching when it was good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I stopped, like, around the time that it started, like, getting, like, shitty, but, mm-hmm. like, I was just, like, it gave me anxiety so bad, and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I tried to do a rewatch a couple years ago, and it started giving me nightmares, and I was just like, nope.
Yeah, I think it's one of the ones that actually does the look of the zombies really well. Like, compared to other zombie media, it does it really well, actually.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, also, and I don't know this,
Yeah, we'll talk about whatever. This is our podcast. It's fine. You can bring it up.
I'll bring it up because it's my podcast, and I'll talk about it if I want to.
It's my podcast, and I'll fucking whatever.
That's what I was getting at. Thank you. Thank you for the musical accompaniment.
I could do all kinds of 50 songs.
But, no, I wanted to also talk about in the original Dawn of the Dead, like, Tom Savini also working on that. Mm-hmm. And then I think he consulted very, very briefly on The Walking Dead.
That makes sense.
I think. Don't quote me on that, but I think he did.
He probably could have, because I know I'm pretty sure in some of the other episodes we talked about, he worked with Greg Nicotero, who's a big Walking Dead's creative force.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Greg Nicotero.
That's exactly what it is.
That makes sense. Makes sense.
But they're both interviewed extensively, again, in the
History of Horror.
History of Horror
episode. Which you also should check out for sure.
That might as well be a source for this episode.
I know, right? And we'd even do, like, a full history again, guys. At some point, we'll do a more comprehensive one. I know it's the theme of the month, but, like, literally the granddaddy that birthed all this shit deserves that. Yeah. That history behind it. So
definitely.
We'll save it when the time comes.
Definitely.
But as zombies were now a craze, horror comedies had also had new life. Some knockoffs were obviously on the way. Like, kind of big time. So these came in the form of the Cuban film, Juan of the Dead, and the Singaporean film, which I'm not sure if Singaporean even is a word, but it was in the article that I read, and I don't know how to say this. Scene of the Dead?
I think it's Schwan.
Schwan? Schwan of the
Dead. Because it...
Schwan. Okay.
Because, okay, and I could be totally wrong with this, but in Korean, the H sound makes a ch sound.
Oh, okay. That makes total sense then. Yeah. Okay.
So
Schwan of the day.
I could be, like, completely talking out of my ass,
we could be offending some Singaporeans right now. First of all, they're like, we're not Singaporeans, and who the fuck's Schwan?
Yeah, I don't know, but, like, that is my only way if someone were just like, hey, pronounce this word, and, like, here's your context, that's how I would pronounce it, but
you're
if
like,
I'm wrong...
Sheen of the dead.
Yeah, it could be that, too.
Actually, it could be, totally. Damn.
Sorry.
We could have also nailed it, too, just so you know.
Yeah, we also could have
fucking nailed it right there. Who the fuck knows? But one actually received decent reviews and an eventual VOD release, while Schwan was actually the first Singaporean zombie film ever and got to play in cinemas for a grand total of 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. A little conservative, I would imagine, about that kind of stuff. But there were also two comic book tie-ins to the film, including a prequel following the first zombie, I was about to say Schwan encounters.
Okay,
and a full-on four-issue adaptation of Shaun of the Dead.
Nice.
Yeah. But at an after-party for this film, the filmmakers received free Cornetto ice cream for using the brand in their film. In an attempt to score more free ice cream, Simon Pegg wrote another scene involving Cornetto ice cream brand in the follow-up to Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Now, they did not get any more free ice cream for Hot Fuzz, but the reference became a staple of Pegg and Wright's work together. And, along with World's End, they developed the three flavors of Cornetto trilogy.
I've never seen Hot Fuzz, but I love At World's End.
I'm the opposite. I think I've seen Hot Fuzz, but like one time. And At World's End, I've been trying to watch it.
I really like At World's End.
I got close, and then like...
I saw it in theaters.
You saw it in theaters?
Yeah, with my dad.
Interesting.
Like, my dad was just like, I think you'll like this movie. I was a teenager. I hated everything. I was like, sure.
You're like, I'm not high, dad. Whatever. I'll like as much as I can.
I didn't get high when I was a teenager, but...
Okay.
I know. I was a bit of a goody two-shoes when I was in high
school. I hadn't recently watched the episode of Buffy, Dad, so I don't know how happy I'm going to be going to this theater.
Pretty much, yeah. but I watched it, and I was just like, I'm not going to like this. And I actually thought it was really
loved
funny.
It.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. But yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
But the scene was actually originally added because Pegg had actually tried to, or it was Pegg or Wright, I'm not sure. It always switches in my sources. One of them tried to actually eat Cornetto ice cream to cure a hangover back in the day, and I think it actually worked. So, because of that little thing they did, it became a scene in the film and became the staple for the whole brand that they have together.
Hmm.
Now, actually, I believe, if I remember correctly, I forgot to put this on here, the color of the Cornetto ice cream is significant to the theme of the film. So the brand for this one is red, so it's all bloody, you know, it's about death. For Hot Fuzz, it's white and blue.
Of course.
Yeah, and then I forgot the color for...
I don't remember it.
It's green and something else. But it symbolizes aliens and the extraterrestrial and science fiction. Yeah. So each thing has their own significance. And
cool.
It's modeled after a trilogy called, I believe, the Colors Trilogy, which is another set of films. But that's a whole fucking thing. I don't even want to get into that. The three flavors of Cornetto Trilogy would have a combined budget of about $38 million and gross around $156 million and establish Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and zombies as Hollywood powerhouses. So,
yeah,
that would be the reason why these guys took off and why their genres are still doing pretty good. So to this day, Simon Pegg still won't let Edgar Wright pay him back the money he owes him for supporting the fledgling director when their funding got pulled.
Aww.
I know. Well, Simon Pegg was working in TV and had a career, obviously.
Right.
But he wasn't like Simon Pegg.
Right. He wasn't like Mr. Moneybag Simon Pegg. Of like, you know, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
And writing his fucking dream movies like Star Trek.
Yeah.
And being in Mission Impossible or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he actually, a lot of UK entertainment people were like, well, you're going to be Hollywood now? And he's just like, dude, what am I going to do? Star in Mission Impossible 3? And he did that like immediately afterwards.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I enjoy him in Mission Impossible. I know,
oh, he's so good.
He's one of the more enjoyable characters in Mission Impossible, I'll even go so far as to say.
Really? You're not a fan of Mission Impossible?
No, I hate Mission Impossible.
You hate Mission Impossible?
I hate Mission Impossible.
Oh, man.
There are too many. There is about 12 too many of them.
That's double the amount that actually exists. That's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
I could have, if someone was just like, name how many Mission Impossible movies, and I would have unironically been like, I don't know, 12.
You're like, that's impossible. I can't complete this mission.
I would have said, I don't know, probably 12. Like, I genuinely thought they're like way too many.
I think it's just they've been released so consistently so recently, you know? Yeah, like they're non-fucking-stop. But yeah,
not my favorite, but also, I don't know. I think my mom does not particularly enjoy Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I can see that. Tom Cruise is kind of just his face sometimes.
Yeah.
He just has that face, man.
He has that face, and then also my mom is, like, staunchly anti-Scientology.
Well, yeah, that would do it, too, because he's kind of the reason why it even is where it's at.
Yeah, exactly. So, she's just, like, I was raised to kind of have this distaste for Tom Cruise also.
Mm.
So I can't really watch anything with him in it without being like, eh.
There's no objectively, like, way to look at a Tom Cruise movie for you. Yeah, that makes sense. Not even Simon Pegg can pull this
around. Except for Minority Report.
Really? Of all the movies?
I watched it when I was a kid and I was just like, this is fucking cool. Because the concept fascinated me.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a true crime-y kind of film.
Yeah,
of
course, it's me.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating concept. And I just, the ethics involved with it just kind of like, it was a very interesting thought exercise for me as like a high school, well, I wasn't in high school, I was probably in like middle school.
Mm-hmm.
But like as a younger kid, I was just like, what the fuck? And so it was a cool time. But.
Yeah. No, it's actually a pretty good movie. I used to like it back in the day a lot.
Yeah, also one of Roger Ebert's favorite movies of all time.
Which is, again, odd because I liked it, but it wasn't, like, brilliant.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a Philip K. Dick adaptation, isn't it?
I think so.
Huh, interesting. Okay, well, Minority Report, for some reason, Alex can tolerate it.
Thank
End
you.
End discussion.
And moving on.
Oh, we only have one more fact. One more fact, guys, to wrap up our production here on Shaun of the Dead. Simon Pegg jokingly wrote a sequel treatment called From Dusk Till Shaun. Which,
I love it.
Yep, obviously would have featured vampires. He calls it Pub Talk, though, but let's hope that this gets made one day because I fucking love that. By the way, Edgar Wright's next film is a horror film.
Is he working on it right now?
He just started shooting like 2 weeks ago.
Oh shit, really?
No, wait. A month ago. Exactly a month ago.
Oh, do you know what it is?
I know the name, but there's like a vague idea of the concept, but I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, okay. I know nothing about it, so this is the first I'm ever hearing about it.
Breaking the news to all of you. Yeah. Oh, wait. By the time this releases, it'll have been shot a month and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Or started shooting. So we'll see. But with that, guys, that's the production of Shaun of the Dead. Again,
it
wasn't a lot, but you know what? We got the Cornetto trilogy in there and some Romero stuff. And
yeah,
we're ready
and
to
we
talk
have
about
brief
our zombies.
History of zombies, and
yes.
Now let's talk about the movie.
Yes. So, Miss Webster.
Yes.
Thoughts on Shaun of the Dead?
I mean, I personally really like this movie.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think is so cool about it is that it also, you know, has that social commentary where, like,
mm-hmm.
talking about, like, consumerism and, like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That I think is really, really cool, and, like, how it's, like, everyone was kind of, like, the zombies before, and,
mm-hmm.
like, just kind of, like, that whole scene in the very beginning where
like
it's
like, they may as well be dead.
Yeah. How I feel at my office.
Yeah,
like,
sometimes.
In my desk sometimes. Like, yeah. No, yeah, so I think, like, those kinds of little things made it really special
mm-hmm.
in comparison to something really campy and, like, I mean, campy things can be special. I don't want to, like, completely shit on camp, but...
I mean, camp can have heart, but it also augments it with camp.
Yeah.
So it's not... You're kind of taking the good with the bad sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, they don't always nail the themes, but this one, like, I think nails its themes, like, tremendously.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's just a funny movie.
I agree. No, I really enjoyed that. And then, it's just, yeah, it's fun. But, yeah, I don't know. I think for me, this film, because I've seen it so many times that it's just, like, I still get little, like,
mm-hmm.
I find parts that, like, I miss, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of pick up something new every time, which is kind of cool. What about you?
I love this movie. Again, this is actually only the third time I've seen it. So, I've only, not too many times.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it once when I was younger, and I thought, like, oh, it's a good movie. And then I saw it again as, like a loser in my 20s. And I was like, fuck, I need to do something with my life. So, this movie's good at facilitating that kind of movement.
Actually, I think this was my, like, loser in my 20s seeing it.
That could, yeah.
Viewing.
This is a loser in your 20s fucking movie. Like, this will get you off your ass.
No, because I was watching it and I was just like, what am I doing with my life?
I think, actually, this might lead into the next question, because this actually is a lot of the reason why I like it, but the character of Sean is a strong, strong character. Mm-hmm. Like, and the way this movie is paced out, and the way that it actually, like, emphasizes character over set pieces and other shit like that.
Over, like, even plot.
Even plot, yeah. It feels more like an indie film than it feels like a studio film.
I agree.
But it has a stylistic way about it that's very studio.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah,
it's such a polished movie about characters, which I think is fucking cool. And Sean's character in particular, because I was looking at some video essays, and one of them was just like, he's just like everybody else in the zombies. And the reason he didn't become one of them is because throughout the film, he chose to grow.
Yeah.
Like, a big plot point is in the beginning is he can't plan. He doesn't know how to plan, and all the thing he does plan, it gets fucked up. But the only way that he saves himself and his people he loves throughout the film later on is by being the one to take agency and come up with the plan to get out of their situation.
Sticking with it and, like,
following through with it, and being the one that makes decisive actions.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is something he's not, even in his interviews at the beginning with his coworkers, he's not decisive or assertive. Like, he doesn't make a point for that.
Yeah, he just kind of, I don't know, kind of, like, lax about everything. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just like, whatever. And it's that kind of, like, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for is, but that kind of just, like, hands-off approach to, like, his own life. Like,
his own life, yeah.
Fucking terrified me. I was like, oh, God.
I know, because I feel like even now, sometimes I get, even with this podcast, I know we produce episodes and it freaks me out sometimes, like, oh, I have a show. Right? but it's one of those things where it still feels like in between times, between work and between everything else, like, maybe I am developing that routine. And maybe, you know, when you get depressed and whatever it is, it's just like, oh, it's easy to just get in the groove of your own misery.
Yeah,
and not grow or do anything to get yourself out of it.
Or, like, constantly working on, like, making yourself a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's one of those things where it's just like, oh, God. And, yeah, that's where it's just like, I'm like, therapy is good.
Yeah. Well, I could also just watch the Let's Play videos for video games, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's just like, and I think that's also one of the things that, like, what's so great about this movie and, like, how using zombies is kind of, like, a metaphor for that. But, like, growth is hard.
It is.
It's annoying, it's fucking painful,
you might get overwhelmed.
It's overwhelming. Yeah. Or in, like, the instance that I loved about, like, his and this kind of goes into the secondary question, like, Sean's relationship with Ed.
Yes.
Like, how ultimately Sean has to sacrifice a key component of his relationship with Ed in order to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how sometimes there are certain friendships that you have in your life that are kind of holding you back.
Yeah.
And, like, how Sean is constantly going to bat for Ed and, like, saying, like, well, he's doing this or he's doing that. And, like, well, he takes messages. Like, you know? Like, dumb shit like that where it's just, like, clearly Ed is, like, keeping, like, kind of holding you back and you're letting him.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, again, this kind of hits home sometimes because Sean clearly has a hard time balancing his life.
Yeah.
Because I get caught up, like, oh, well, I mean, I have a lot of friends. Like, we were talking about, like, I like spending time with my friends. But sometimes that can detract from other things that I'm doing that help me out. It distracts you from,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I'm doing it just out of genuine, like, come on, guys. Like, I, you know, we're a crew.
Yeah. Like,
this
is
there for people, whatever it is. But at the same time, you lose your own self to your habits and whatever it is and make excuses for other people. When sometimes you really shouldn't, but you want to because you care.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a, I think the film nails that part of, like, it's a big aspect of Sean not being able to control his life.
Yeah.
And the having Ed is a good feature for that. And that he's with him the whole film shows how Sean still has to keep surmounting this. And it's funny because the other character, the other roommate, I was, like, watching a video essay, and they both represent different parts of Sean. The other roommate's always working, always doing, making money, doing his
kind
stuff.
Kind of a hard ass.
Kind of a hard
kind
ass.
Kind of a dickhead.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, yeah, remember when we had that really fun time, and we kind of, like, let loose and had a good time? And he was like, "That, yeah, that was 5 fucking years ago, grow up. Like, and, like, you don't, and it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, you don't want to be that guy.
You don't want to be that guy.
But you also don't want to be Ed.
Exactly, and that's where Sean's, like, right in the middle, because he sees both paths. He's like, well, I could fess up, and then maybe, what if I turn to that? And then with Ed's is a lot easier, yeah. But at the same time, it's just as detrimental.
Yeah, and then it's just like, you know, then you have to, yeah.
You have to find yourself.
Yeah, and finding your own, like, your own balance, whatever mm-hmm. that looks like.
Yeah, and I'm clearly, with this film too, like with Sean's hip-hop selection and his former DJ career, and even the magic that Liz would talk about when they first met and, like, how things were different back then.
Yeah.
Like Sean, and then Sean's always like, well, yeah, I want to go on to better things. And then the coworker's like, when? Like, at some point, what Sean was doing was good enough. And then life kept happening for everyone else. And he just kind of stagnated like a goddamn zombie.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those things where it's just, like, terrifying for me. Because it's mm-hmm. just, like, you're just like, oh, I'll do it eventually or I'll get to it eventually. And it's just, like, if you keep telling yourself eventually, then it's, like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. And it's always scary, too, when yeah. you kind of make that leap, like, you know, murdering something.
This movie is, like, really real.
It is. It is. Hey, you remember how scared we were when we fucking first launched this goddamn podcast,
though? We were terrified.
Guys, we were, like, for Psycho, we were literally just like, does it sound good? Like, did we laugh too much? Like, how do we post about it? Do we have to share on our personal profiles? Like, it was like a whole... Now yeah. we just, like, shit it out.
Now we have a whole routine. Like, now we know what we're about. Mm-hmm. Like, now, like, and, like, even, like, while we're talking, like, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, like, I don't know, like, what my life would be like without having this as right. part of, like, my life.
It's weird because it's, like, I'd obviously have more time, like, way more fucking time.
Oh, yeah, I'd have so much more time and, like, but, you know, my car would have significantly less gas, or less mileage.
I might have a Nintendo Switch, I don't fucking know. Like, I really want one, guys.
But also, like, you know, the amount of, like, emotional fulfillment mm-hmm. I get out of this show is, like, ridiculous.
And to think you'd still be thinking fantastically about your own podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about it like we were talking about it before. What would your fantasy podcast be?
And like, we'd always talk about it, and we would still just be talking about, like, the what cool? if
yeah.
and how cool it would be. Right. And then if this had never happened, we would still just, like, basically, I wouldn't, like, we wouldn't have probably, like, be hanging out as much as we do now.
Yeah, seriously, right? But it's, like, it's, again, one of those things that first you have to kill the first zombie. You have to kill the first zombie for that
growth. You have to accidentally push over the zombie so she impales herself, and you realize it's a zombie, and then you're like, yeah. oh, and then you realize it's a zombie, and then you go apeshit and, like, have one of those weird little bat things.
Yeah, exactly. Find your bat.
Find your weapon.
But see, I think that is the magic of this fucking film. Because, I mean, as we attribute it to our podcast, like, that can be attributed to anything. Even me moving to Los Angeles. Like, just over a year ago, guys, you I was were in, like, the inland.
You seemed pretty, you know, like, you were determined, but also probably just like, it. You seemed terrified.
I think, because I had to figure out how to live here within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which was, I remember, you remember me sending
you. You were stressed.
I was just like, I'm talking to these people, I'm driving to LA to interview for this. But then it puts you in a Sean mode.
Yeah.
Where at first he was like, fuck, what am I going to do? Look, well, I'm just going to, like, you know, I want to have my same connection, so I'm going to try to preserve those as much as possible and blah, 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 and do bullshit for himself. And then he's like, he has to actually save people and make sure the situation put himself in works.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it, because towards the end of finding that apartment, again, I was almost sold on the first people I met. But then I was like, you know what? This is going to be a big deal, so I have to go find and talk to other people. At some point in the process, it was just like, all right, cool, interview you, don't like that place, da, 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 and, like, back and forth. So you kill your first zombie, and then you get really good at killing zombies. That's how growth happens right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. Good first question. Huh?
Great first question. And then also really, like, I feel like this is, like, a really weird, like, mutual therapy session.
I think so, too. I think we needed it because, guys, our days, it's been a really fucky summer. Like, to be honest with you.
It's been summer for, like, less than a week, and I'm just like, God.
Oh, yeah, huh.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really fucky spring also. A very fucky one.
Well, as we go into summer, it also, like, that's where you get into, like, you know how seasonal depression is, like, a huge thing for me? Mm-hmm. For some people in my family, it's also, like, summer. Like, mm-hmm. like when it gets, like August-y and, like, late summer, it's just, like, hazy and everyone's just like, ugh.
Oh, that's interesting.
Summer depression's also, like, a thing.
See, I usually hate summer, except I had a really good one last year. So now I'm like, please be like last year.
Well, that's because you just moved here, right?
Yeah, no, I was swiping and making money. It was fun. Now I'm like, credit cards, all right.
we'll find other things.
Exactly. But... I just got to stop playing the games, man. We're good. No, I'm not doing that.
No, you have to start killing some zombies.
We got to start killing some zombies. All right.
See? Growth.
Growth. Well, also, that brings back to another point about even the podcast stuff. Like, the things we used to think about before were just like, well, what episodes are we going to do? Well, then now it's just like, how do we make these episodes stand out?
Yeah.
And what's the hook? Like, the process changed completely in how we handled these
episodes.
Remember
the things that we were worried about. Like, remember when we got ramen that one time when we were just like, oh, let's hang out and, like, talk about, like, the logistics of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the things that we were talking about were, like, things that, like, we weren't even, like, things that are, like, total non-issues.
Yeah,
now.
Right?
Like, I remember, like, the only thing that really stuck was Kill of the Film. That was the only thing we really talked
which
about.
Which we sporadically do.
Which we don't even really do that often. Yeah. But, like, if like, a movie is particularly kill-heavy, it'll come up. But, like, yeah. Like, I mean, most of the shit that we were talking about, like, it doesn't even come up.
Right? And see, again, with this film, growth and refinement. Because, again, Sean, at some point, the way he figures out what his goal is, his goal changes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at first his goal is just for himself. He's just like, oh, well... You're not safe in here. We need to go to the pub instead. Why? Well, we just gotta go. Because that's safer. Just because.
It just seems safer.
Because it's about him.
Yeah.
And then when the situation dawns on itself and he has to do something about it, it is about safety. And it is about getting the best for everyone and making sure that they survive.
Yeah.
Which is, again, God, good fucking movie.
I agree.
Okay. We're good? Back?
Yeah. No, I'm just... I'm very oddly nostalgic about when we just, like, got started and everything.
I know,
like,
it's a different time. Different fucking... It was probably... I think it was exactly... No, not exactly
a year ago. Because we started planning in, like, August.
Yeah, August, that's right. Almost a year ago.
Late God July, damn. Early August. Because we started recording in August to release in October.
Yes, that's right. Man.
Or September. No, it was August. We started planning in August, recorded in September to release in October. Because October was the first month we started releasing episodes.
Right. Man, remember how ahead we used to be? Oh, the times have changed.
Well,
okay.
You know, we're busy.
Exactly. We've got much heavier lives now than we used to. My gosh. Okay, so on that, how do you actually feel about the zombies themselves in these films? Are they effective as a threat?
I feel like they're more of a comedic device.
Yeah, they're kind of a nuisance at the worst of times.
Yeah, like, they're a nuisance, they're a comedic device, they're used at the best moments for comedy, drama death.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't think they're really as much of a threat, because, they're used as, like, it's a zom-com. Like, they're used as, like, the butt of the joke.
They're the backdrop.
Like, that scene in the very beginning when, like, they're just like, there's a girl in your yard. And, like, they go into the yard or, like, the garden or whatever. And, like, she's just, like, in the yard and they're just like,
She's
totally drunk. and then like, obviously she, like, falls over on that pole and, like, she gets, like, impaled, and, like, then she lifts herself up off of it, and then they're just like, oh God, the zombie.
Right?
And, like, I love that scene because you can, like, it's, like, such a great embodiment of what the zombie comedy, like, encapsulates, where it's just, like, that, like, everyone, like, no one... in zombie comedies has seen a horror film in their life.
Yeah.
So they're just totally oblivious, and, like, it takes, like, really blatant, like, this is real for them to be like, oh shit, and, like, then they don't even say the word zombie, like,
right?
You know, they're just like, we're not gonna take that leap. We're not saying the Z word.
No.
And I just think that's really cool. And just, like, that whole sequence was, I think, my favorite scene in the whole movie.
I think it does a really good way of, like you were saying, it establishes the zombies for their purpose in the film. Mm-hmm. So it does that really well. Because it is a funny scene, and then they are a little bit of a threat sometimes, and then it moves the plot along. So it does everything it needs to do,
and
it does
it well.
And it
gives you the idea. Yeah.
It lets you know what you're getting into, which I think is why it should be a favorite scene, actually. It's actually a really good goddamn scene.
It's a great scene, yeah.
I think my favorite, though, might be when the Queen comes on. In the jukebox. Queen?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you said the queen, and
the
I was
queen.
Like,
there's a queen zombie?
No, I like the queen, like the queen of England. Like,
oh my god.
That's why I was. Really...
As a zombie would be hilarious.
That would be funny, but no. Oh,
he like has to kill the queen. He's like, I don't know if I feel right about this.
No, that's why I was really, really confused. But no, when Queen comes on, that's a good scene.
I was like fucking pumped, man. Well, I was fucking pumped.
I love that because one of my one of the few things I really picked up from my. One of my film classes was like we had like a whole like class dedicated to the use of music in horror film, and like the use of like music in just film in general being like music that's playing in real or like real life quote unquote like music that's playing in the scene, and then how it like comes out into like music that's playing like on the soundtrack.
Yeah,
I don't know, like how like
diegetic sound versus non-diegetic sound.
Yes.
Yes,
that's the word that I was looking for, and I was like, and I almost because I've been listening to the Scientology episodes for the last podcast on the left, I kept almost saying like Dianetics.
You know, Dianetic sound like my theme.
No, but yeah, diegetic or whatever. Yeah, that that and like just like the usages of that is,
in this film. Holy
in this
shit.
Is great.
Holy
but
shit.
Like in general. I love looking at that in horror film, in any film, but like in this particular movie, it's really cool.
Yeah, no, I think that actually is something. I'm gonna skip ahead here a little bit. So the use of music in this film, Edgar Wright has a very distinctive soundtrack for each of his films. He's a music man. I mean, even especially with the, you know, Sean's like CD collection and shit. They just by giving out the names, my hip hop nerd was just like, yeah. But how do you feel
when they were throwing the
going,
vinyls?
Yeah, they're naming him. They're like, oh, dude, like, that's limited edition.
Yeah.
Fucking tosses it out.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about Edgar Wright's kind of use of music? And then in this film in particular, like, what do you think about that aspect of his style?
I like it. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I feel like I'm going to have to go through and, like, maybe, like, do some more investigating into it because not a lot of it is sticking out to me right now.
Yeah.
So I think it probably stuck out more to you than it did for me. So I think this is a better question for you.
Well, I think it's brilliant.
Well, please elaborate because like for me, I think of like the queen scene, but like other than that, like there's nothing that's really like sticking out to me in terms of like music because I know there's like the cassette or CD.
And there's the jukebox plays again is the when you leave me now, you'll take... And then John's, like, trying to feel, he's like, who put this song on? It's on random.
Oh, yes. That's fun. I think that's fun.
But I like that Edgar Wright, first of all, he knows how to use his music stylistically. Like
effectively.
Yeah, like, for, you know, non-diegetic sound, for something that comes off screen, and he's like, he makes a sequence of it.
Non-Dianetic.
Non-Dianetic sound, no. No L. Ron Hubbard in this bitch. But also... using it as a device in the film too, because with the jukebox stuff and with like Baby Driver and all that shit, like he's like music is a fundamental part of the story too, or at least provides a little bit extra to the scene, and it's part of the scene. It's not just happening and like, oh look, we're shooting to a montage. It's like the jukebox is playing and we're fucking shit up.
I wish I could have watched Baby Driver before everything with Kevin Spacey went down.
Fuck, that's... I forgot he was in that movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I really wanted to watch it, and it was on my list of movies to watch, and then everything with Kevin Spacey went down, and I was just like... And now I don't want to watch it. I watched, like, the second half of it, and I enjoyed it, but it was just tainted. Mm-hmm. It was so tainted.
Nah, he totally fucks it up. Turn that motherfucker into a zombie.
Which is so disappointing, because I wanted to like it so bad, and I just wish I could have watched it before.
Yeah. Well, it also, I don't think it's as good as Edgar Wright's other films, but it's still pretty entertaining. Mm. But, I mean, the use of music is the primary focus in that one.
Yeah, I think it's important. Well, I mean, super important.
Yeah, in that film in particular. But I think that, like, his ability to fluctuate between, like, pop music and music that sounds kind of poppy, but it totally isn't, and you might know it, but you don't.
Yeah.
But still have the same effect as a song that you... vehemently groove to and aren't suddenly sick of. Like, he knows how to find that balance.
Yeah.
And I think this movie, it's not as emphasized as some of his later works, like Scott Pilgrim and things like that. But it is a good showcase or a little preview as to how Edgar Wright would effectively use music.
The music in Scott Pilgrim, though.
Fuck, dude. That shit was awesome.
Amazing.
That shit was fucking... He used a Zelda theme in there!
I know.
Ugh.
So good. Oh my God. Haven't done a Scott Pilgrim rewatch in a really long time.
Same here. Although the character of Scott, kind of not the greatest guy. I mean, Scott's especially not nowadays.
The best. And like, you know, and even like...
Ramona?
Or even Ramona is not like my favorite. But the story in it of itself and like the visuals of the movie is really cool.
What was the girl's other? Knives?
Mm-hmm. Knives Chow.
Knives Chow. I like her. She was fun.
I like Knives, yeah.
She's like, her exaggerated movements is just like, Scott! Ba-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Every time I'm just like, yeah, blue hair scene, fucking go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so which death, though, of all the characters here was the most effective for you?
Oh, are we talking strictly character death?
Oh, or zombie kill. The mom, was that the most impactful for
not
you?
Not the most. No. Ed.
Ed? Oh, yeah.
Ed's was like... It just made me sad.
Yeah, especially when you first see it. I'm like, I did not expect that shit.
No, I think the first time I saw it, that was the one that, like, going into seeing it, like, the second and third time, that was the one that I remember more vividly than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the annoying, like, guy friend. I knew, I remember him getting, like, murked.
Fucking, like, murked the worst.
Yeah, but, like, that was, like, that was it. That was definitely a nod to George A. Romero. If I have ever seen a nod to George A. Romero with like the guts everywhere, that was like that.
Oh
was,
yeah, pulling the entrails and all that. Yeah, yeah.
That was when he was like getting pulled apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was, yeah, that was for one of the sequels to Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm. Dude, actually, speaking of that character, I believe his name is David. Mm-hmm. He also represents a very interesting archetype too. Of like when we talk about growth. There are also these cynics in our lives, too. And that motherfucker who always talks shit and uses a reason to put himself above others, but when push comes to shove, doesn't have a solution. We all know that fucking person.
Yeah, I'm that for myself.
But, like, to have him die so gruesomely, I like that the theme, like, it reinforces, yeah, no, like, that habit is stupid.
Yeah, I think all of the characters, to some extent, were, like, hindering Sean's growth in one way or another, and I think it kind of... how it all ended up being tied together was really cool.
Yeah.
Because even the other, one of the other, like, the girl, like, she...
Like Shoshana or some shit?
Yeah, yeah, she was, like, very, like, critical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was, like, the other guy was, like, a critic, but, like, he was just like, oh, I'm so much better then. But, like,
exactly.
The girl,
he's
like...
pompous.
Yeah, she, like, put him down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was constantly just like, uh-huh, like, and you think that you're gonna be able to do that. Like, you know, like, it was just... Like, very, like, talking down to you versus,
And then she's, like, invested with him, too, even knowing that he loves Liz. But she's just like, I want to be a part of this, and I'll just take it. Like, she seems like a settling kind of person.
Yeah.
Which, again,
well, because she ended, she ended up settling with David.
Yep.
You know, like, it was, like, something where she full-on admitted, where she was just like, I just settled.
Yeah. Again, the move...
complacency is, like, it in this. Like,
don't settle, guys. Just you know, fucking run into a horde before you fucking settle.
Right. But yeah, I think Ed's death is the one that stood out. Because that's the one going into watching this was the one that I distinctly remember the most.
Mm-hmm.
That and the stepdad.
Dude, the stepdad actually hit me really hard. That one, because the first time I ever saw the film, I remember I was half paying attention. Because I was, like, into it, but I was also, like, I don't know, playing games with some bullshit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you were being, like, a shitty teenager.
Yeah, being a shitty teenager, exactly. But, you know, because our whole life situation and things like that, the dad being just, like, I met you when you were 12 and you're already so grown up, and, like, I knew you could be better. You just need the motivation, but I believe that you can do it. And I was, like, to see that, like, that got me all, like, oh, my God. Because you see yourself in Sean a little bit sometimes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, that's the point, right?
Yeah, and then to have that character that he has a disdain for the whole time, which, I mean, me, again, I don't understand it, but I've known people that to be like that with their stepdads and stuff like
that.
But, like, to see that the dad always, like, believed in him and, like, actually did his best, and Sean finally gets to see the forest for the trees before it's too fucking late. It's just, like, that really impacted me a lot. I think, I don't know why.
Yeah, well, it's super emotional, and it's just, like, you know, I think one of those things that in movies, like, especially movies like this, that they don't really get to address is, like relationships between parents and children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, one of those things that I think this movie did really great, because you also see Sean and his mom.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, like, I was just, like, really, like, I was really sad. Like, when I watched it, I was just like, oh,
yeah,
this is so sad. Because he, like, clearly loves his mom so much, you know? And, like, he only, like, really tries to stay civil with his stepdad because his mom, you know.
Loves him. Yeah. Oh, man, that's such, and it's so, I think, compared to other zombie films, speaking particularly of Zack Snyder, speaking particularly of Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which treats its characters more like, they kind of idolize each other, and they don't really, they have flaws, but the flaws are more internal and not, like, in their relationships. But with this one, Sean, he has obviously a weird relationship with his mom, because he still doesn't want to spend time with her. And with the stepdad, he's obviously, like, you know, standoffish with him. But, like, it, like, these are flawed relationships between people, and most films, like, they're only flawed on the surface level and not, like, on a deep character level that says something about them.
Yeah, where it's, like, very, like, obvious.
Yeah, and it says something about the character and how he deals with anything.
Yeah.
Like, that's, usually it's just an archetype, you know? But there's not, that's not the case with these guys, and I think that's why the parents' death affected me the most, because the relationship isn't, he loves his mom, but he still avoids her and does things that's, like, like being a bad son or being a complacent person.
Yeah.
And then with the stepdad, he's very, very, again, standoffish, whatever it is.
I think a lot of that has to do with probably Sean's own internal, like, shame for not being better.
No, exactly.
Because
yes,
he wants, like, he doesn't want his mom to be, like, not ashamed, but, like, you know, disappointed in him.
And with his, like, inability to bring Liz over to his mom, he's like, because that's, like, another feat. And Sean's beyond the point of, like, passing feats.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that anymore.
That's the thing that I was, like, thinking about. I was just, like, I couldn't imagine, like, because, I mean, like, I'm trying to think, like, where I was at, like, after DJ and I had been together for 3 years. Like, I'm, like, at that point, like, and my mom had never having met DJ. Like, I'm, like,
you gotta. Yeah.
Although, I do think that, now that I think about it, it took me, well, for completely unrelated reasons, it took me around that time for me to meet DJ's mom.
Yeah, same kind of deal, though. Or not, yeah, unrelated reasons, but still like that. It's a big deal.
Like, it was it really was a long time. But yeah, so I just think, like, those kinds of things are just, like, very interesting. So.
And they're very human elements to put in a story that zombie films don't get human elements too much.
Yeah.
They get surface-level society commentary, things like that. To get a human aspect of it, I think this makes for some very effective deaths when it finally happens.
I agree.
Oh, wow, we're getting deep on this one.
I know. So, I mean, you haven't seen Outworld's End yet, but I'm kind of curious. What other genre would you like to see Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg take on if they decided to add a film to their Cornetto series?
That's so hard. I have no... Honestly, the only one I can kind of think of is, like, a Western. I think they can... Oh, you hate Westerns. I love Westerns.
I couldn't even... I saw myself going to make, like, that expression, and I was like, you know Anthony likes them. Why are you making this expression?
Right.
Rain it in. And then I just, like, I was like, ugh.
They're just ubla. I kind of think they can... Because he had his... what is it called? A Fistful of Fingers as his first film. And I think Edgar Wright has an idea in there that he can do it. But I also would, again, I do want to see an alien film. Obviously it exists in The World's End, so I do have to watch that at some point. But
although I'm really bummed that you even know that it's
an alien movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel everybody knew.
No one knew that it was an alien movie going into, like, I didn't know it was.
Oh, I think that one of the trailers might have given it away for me.
Was it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I kind of knew it was.
I didn't know it was an alien movie, so I was just like, "Oh," because it doesn't really.
I haven't seen it, so yeah. but how about you? What genre do you think Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, with of course Nick Frost thrown in there for good measure, the trio? What do you think they should handle next?
Well, see, this is hard because I like maybe three genres of films.
I think they're too big for found footage.
Shut up.
He wouldn't be able to handle it now.
No, I think...
Just Nick Frost shitting. Like, a towels fall down his fucking ghost.
I don't like this. I don't know. I don't want that. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I think... No.
You got crime movies. You got,
I don't know.
Vampires, Simon vampires. Could
do vampire movie?
Maybe.
I think we are so...
From Dusk Till Dawn?
I think From Dusk Till Dawn would be very funny. No, I think... Yeah, I mean, maybe a period piece would be fun.
Huh, it's kind of like a Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights kind of
deal.
I was
thinking more like Sherlock Holmes, but...
I mean, that's it. The Shanghai Nights is kind of in the same era,
yeah.
But with Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson. Good movie, by the way.
But yeah, kind of like, yeah, a Sherlock Holmes type.
If Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly didn't fuck up Holmes so recently, I think I'd be down for that too.
Yeah. I mean, if we're ignoring that, then I would prefer that. But yeah, I think that would be fun.
All right, cool. I can dig that. Western and then a Sherlock Holmesy adventure. I feel like we're missing something though. Like, there's got to be one other genre we're not thinking of that they would kind of like fucking kill it in.
What, a melodrama? I don't know.
No. We already did Aliens. I'm trying to think of like the big superhero.
That would be fun.
Superhero. Of course, dude. No.
That would be fun.
As just like the laziest piece of shit superheroes ever, but they're like...
So like
they're
Hancock.
But they're like all the town has.
Yeah, so like Hancock.
Less aggressive Will Smith, because he was kind of like not Will Smithy enough, I don't think, for that role.
Well, I think he was trying to not
be. Trying to not be, but it made the movie kind of boring.
Because that was like... Yeah, well, that was like... Because like there was like Hancock, and then that was also around the time that like... Like, 7 Pounds came out, so it was, like, Will Smith was, like, at very different ends of, like, the acting spectrum around that time.
He's, like, trying to not be Men in Black Will Smith, for
Yeah,
sure.
And it was, like, Pursuit of Happiness. Like, it was, like, really, really sad, intense movies, and then, like, Hancock, which was weird.
It's, Hancock, I think, should have been way different. But I do think, with Edgar Wright's style, and his ability to get good music, and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost... and the cavalcade of British comedians. I think a superhero genre... Fuck the Western. A superhero movie from Edgar Wright, written by Simon Pegg. Let me see that shit. I want to see that right away.
That would be fun.
That would be good.
I am excited to see the horror film that Edgar Wright is working on.
Me too. I wonder how he's going to handle it. Because Baby Driver was a little more serious than a lot of the other stuff I'd seen him do.
Baby Driver? I didn't even know Edgar Wright had done it until you'd mentioned it earlier.
Really?
No.
Yeah, it's kind of different from the rest of his films.
I I'd only seen parts of Baby Driver, and I'd only seen, like, the last half of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of might just have to suck it up and watch the whole thing, but...
Spacey, though, dude.
I know, man.
I can't.
I had to stop watching...
He was just too brutal, dude.
I know, like, I had to stop watching House of Cards, too.
I think everybody stopped watching fucking House of Cards at some point.
It's true.
Unrelated to Spacey for the most part.
That's true. I did stop. I loved House of Cards for so long, and then I just had to stop. I just had to let it go. Let it die. I think superhero would be a good one.
That'd be a good one. So last question.
Okay.
Your favorite piece of zombie related media to kick off our theme for this month, Zombies versus Aliens.
All right. This is a good one to actually end the episode on. I think for me, my favorite piece of zombie media.
Yep. It doesn't have to be a film.
Well, okay. I feel like you're trying to corral me into saying The Walking Dead.
Oh, no, I didn't even think about The Walking Dead. I was just trying to give you a broad brush to work with.
Do 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 do. This is hard.
I know.
This
I can see. Really I guys, I can see the gears turning in her head
I'm
right now.
I'm thinking because there's a lot out there.
Okay, I will come in.
Please, if you have yours, save me.
All right, so I got two.
Oh, okay.
They're both video games.
Oh my fucking god! Okay.
Resident Evil, the series, okay. I think is if I were to pick one, obviously I'd pick Resident Evil 4, although they're technically not zombies. So if I'm sticking to the zombie installments, Resident Evil 2, I think that is. Probably the best piece of zombie media out there because it is something that revitalized the genre for a whole population that I grew up in.
I'm looking in a metaphorical camera somewhere far away. Like
doing the gym look?
Yeah, like okay.
Yeah, I would say Resident Evil is, to me, probably just a very significant piece of zombie media that people kind of overlook because it is... Because I feel games are very... Even though they're interactive, they can be very artful. Mm-hmm. And though Resident Evil was cheesy, it did so much for me as a child in terms of my love for zombies. But if I were to take a more contemporary example, Left 4 Dead. Another good one. Have you ever played Left 4 Dead?
No, I've wanted to, though.
Oh my god, dude. Swarmed by hundreds and hundreds of zombies. Yeah, and then each scenario is different. There's not a story, really. There's just scenarios you go through, but it's oddly cinematic, and there are storytelling elements to it. But that, to me, is one of those ones that just doesn't get old, because you get your running zombies, and you get your hordes, and you get... See, I think that's why I chose the two. You get your slow, methodical, plot-based zombie entertainment with Resident Evil, and then you get your fast-paced, rushing, action-heavy... Left 4 Dead zombies in that. Those are my two, right there.
So, I think why this is so tricky for me, I don't particularly like zombie movies.
Oh, interesting.
I don't particularly like zombies.
Zombie anything, huh?
No, they kind of bore me.
You're like, I'm about these fucking aliens,
son. I fucking love aliens. I could tell you my favorite alien movie, but I couldn't tell you my fucking favorite...
Zombie media?
No.
Not even other TV shows? Well, Zombieland.
I do like Zombieland. Okay. Zombieland's good. But like again, these are all things that like I like, but nothing that I'm particularly like fucking crazy about.
That makes
like
sense.
Even like I can't even feel like I can say The Walking Dead in confidence because I stopped watching it. Right?
Yeah, you stopped watching it before I jumped the shark, though.
But I stopped watching it.
Yeah, and you can't encapsulate the whole Walking Dead.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
So like even The Walking Dead, I can't even really say.
Well, what about a season of The Walking Dead? Because I would say the first season of The Walking Dead's the most, like, one of the most cinematic TV shows.
Yeah.
Like, around.
I agree.
That was Frank Darabont directing that shit. And we haven't... Have we done a Darabont film yet? I don't think so. No. When we do more Stephen King films, you guys are you're for sure gonna get some fucking Darabont.
Fine. I'll say season one of The Walking Dead.
Okay, cool. I corralled you into something with...
Yeah, I'll say season one of The Walking Dead with an honorable mention. I've only seen a couple episodes, but I enjoy the concept. iZombie.
Never seen it, actually.
Are you familiar with the concept?
Vaguely from like an IGN article back in the day.
Okay. But for those of you who don't know, iZombie is a TV show where basically zombies are... Oh, shit! No, my favorite zombie piece of media is Santa Clarita Diet. Boom.
What's that? I've never seen that.
Oh, shit. Okay, so it is on Netflix. It got canceled, so sorry. Spoiler alert.
Boo.
But it has three great seasons. It has Drew Barrymore in it.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to
edit down that spike in the audio right there. That was some genuine shit.
My wife. I love Drew Barrymore. But yeah, it's great. Watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's good.
Cool.
It's good. It's like a good, like, family kind of... like TV show. Well, it's not like for families, but like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's like
family based TV show.
It follows like this family and like their zombie chaos ensues. It's very fun.
Yeah. All right. Cool. I will. Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah. Santa Clarita Diet is very funny.
All right. Cool.
It's like wholesome. It's surprisingly wholesome for a zombie TV show.
Even though you were ready to default into the first season of The Walking Dead, I'm glad the enthusiasm levels came out once you realized.
When I was just like, I was trying to think of something because I knew that there was something somewhere that I did enjoy.
You're like, I don't generally hate zombies because there's at least something you're like,
yeah, cool. I knew that there was something that like brought me joy at one point about zombies that I liked. I did also enjoy the World War Z book.
The book, I can see that. But see, that's what I meant by media, all kinds. So, okay, the book, I can dig that too. Right.
See, it's all out there. So I think we're good?
I think we're good. I think we did it, guys. Get ready for next fucking week.
Yeah.
Because we're going aliens.
Yeah,
what?
It is my week. We are bringing it in with some aliens. We are talking about arguably a shitty movie, but...
Well, we don't know. We haven't seen it in so long.
That's true. We are talking about a movie that Anthony and I both have not seen in a very, very long time. So I don't know if it has aged well or horribly. We're going to find out. We're going to watch it. And if I have to sit down and just be like, Oh God. Then we'll find out, and we'll trapeze through it together if it's mm-hmm. absolute garbage. But it could very well be.
Yeah, it could totally be. And again, we're not gonna go too crazy into for this month. We're not choosing films that are the obvious ones.
Yeah, we're again, kind we, of trying yeah. to go against the grain. So mm-hmm. if you're going into this thinking like, oh, maybe they'll cover like Alien.
Yeah, no, we're saving that one.
We're
Don't
saving
worry.
It. We're saving it. That needs like its own like. It needs its own, like, heavy-duty episode. Like, yeah. we can't just, like, throw it in for, like, a theme month. Like, it needs its due diligence.
It's a tentpole. It's a, it's a tentpole in a month episode.
Yes, for sure. So, just to, you know, wrap everything up, that was 2004's Shaun of the Dead, directed by the wonderful Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm. Starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
And just to remind you, because we are going to keep reminding you at the beginning, probably, and at the end, probably, of every episode, July is our last month of season one. Mm-hmm. August, we are going to be taking a break. We'll still be around and active on social media, and then we'll be coming back in September with brand new, funky, fresh content.
Yep, and actually look out on our social media. Because for our last episode, we're going to want to take some questions from you guys.
Yeah.
So we're going to be asking.
Yeah, we're going to be asking for some questions. So start thinking and yeah.
And pay attention to our stories. That's it. Just pay attention to our stories.
That's all you got
to
do.
Fine. Yeah.
And if you are curious and you want to find us on social media so you can ask us said questions, you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then you can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me, Alex Webster, on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
See, this is why I have you read off and cap us off and bookend the whole show. However, I want one more shot. One more shot.
All right.
All right.
You'll get yours.
Does that mean? Yeah, yeah. One more shot, huh? Yeah, you'll get yours. All right, buddy.
One day.
One day.
All right, guys. We'll catch you next week.
Peace out, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.